Good afternoon. This is Wilf's Wednesday afternoon program from 5 to 6 every Wednesday afternoon. We wake you up to the news of the day that is not in the commercial media. We're very happy to be here. This is our last radio show of 2010. And so we've invited two of our Wilf sisters to come and talk to us about what Wilf has been doing this past year and about the challenges for next year. Let me mention, which I forgot to, that Wilf stands for the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, affectionately known as Wilf. And also my co-host and an engineer, technical engineer, Dick Paddock is here.
Good afternoon, good evening. We want to remind you about the pencil and paper.
Yes, because we always give you more ways to get further information about whatever our topics are for the day. So I want to say hello to Lucy Lewis.
Hi, Lori.
Hey, and Miriam Thompson.
Hi, Lori and Dick and Lucy. And our listeners.
And our listeners. Okay, so we're going to do a little bit of a year-end, take a look at things. One of the things that came to my mind first is something that we have been very, very actively involved with this year and the years are labor issues. And I've long been promising an update on our labor issues here, both at the university and in the town of Chapel Hill. So, Miriam, I think we'll start with you.
Sure. I was looking over, actually, past newsletters, and of all the groups, I think, in the Triangle, let alone probably North Carolina, I think that Wilf has really been at the forefront of workers' rights and labor struggles from its long history on the picket line with the Moncure strikers in 2008-2009 and currently with the housekeepers on the UNC campus who have suffered decades of abuse and are now attempting to revive, and we'll talk about that, and then I'll go on to the public workers in our own Chapel Hill, our human rights city. The housekeepers have been offered, after much protest, again, Wilf being in the leadership, but have been offered by the chancellor an external source, not the one that we'll talk about in the public workers, but someone who will listen to the housekeepers. One has to, of course, ask why his vice chancellor and other noteworthy people on the campus were not able to listen to housekeepers and come up with strong recommendations to change the increasingly militarized culture. The housekeepers, the continued abuse, the race discrimination, sexual harassment, and so on, but they have agreed to hire someone from the outside, and that's going to come early this year. The challenge for the housekeepers, however, is they have no collective bargaining rights. We have talked about that frequently. The state law, one of only two states in the nation that doesn't allow collective bargaining for its important public workers, without whom the state cannot run, is an affliction of the housekeepers because they really have no bargaining power.
And let's just mention that public workers include firemen, include
police, teachers,
all kinds of public workers, yes.
That's right. Without, again, our children wouldn't learn and our state couldn't run but are now being savaged, which we can talk about later. What is the real threat to the housekeepers, which, again, without collective bargaining and any power which workers in general in this country are being denied, is that they are threatening contracting out, and they're threatening major cuts. And most of the major cuts will be the lowest paid as they've been before. And I'll quickly take you through the public workers and then have sisters and brothers chime in. The public workers, as some of you have, many of you, I hope, have read in the newspapers, two of them who tried to start a union, who were busy trying to protect workers and learning how to do grievances, we feel retaliation against by the town were terminated. First, they were put on administrative leave for almost 6 weeks with pay, And the town hired something called Capital Associated Industries, which is clearly on their website anti-union and anti-collective bargaining for public employees. So the town hires them. They hired an investigator, and they went ahead and spent 6 weeks in building a case against these two workers, not giving them any information as to what they were being charged with, nor allowing them to face their accusers. The latest stage is, again, Wilf has been on protest lines at the town council arguing that these men should be returned to their jobs, that CAI, often called CIA, but CAI should be their contract should be rescinded, but most important, these two men should be returned to work. Wilf, by the way, has been doing a collection, because not only were they terminated, but the town prevented them from getting unemployment insurance while their appeals were forthcoming. They have lost the first leg of their appeal, represented by Al McShirley, our great and civil rights attorney. They're now on the second stage, where they'll go before a personnel appeals committee. And that's where it stands, and maybe later we can indicate where you can send contributions to help these guys along until their jobs are restored. They are appealing, by the way, the denial of their unemployment benefits.
Okay, that's a quick overview, and we'll get back to the larger context of what's happening to workers in this country in our second round. And Lucy? Is there some comment that you would like to make about that, or Dick?
Well, I think it's just a continuing concern, you know, that two of our major public institutions in the community, which we would hope would be providing a progressive model for the rest of the community, have in fact been bogged down over the last year or two in really anti-worker attacks on workers that are predominantly people of color. And here at the university, which has a history of discrimination and intimidation and oppression of its lowest wage workers going back decades, we know that former slaves built our university, slaves built the university, and then former slaves continued to serve the university in many different capacities, and have continued to be a lot of the lowest wage workers in the areas of housekeeping and dining workers. We saw in the 60s a resurgence of a fight back. Mm-hmm. That the dining workers went on strike in 1969 and 1970, and finally were able to make some gains against some very egregious working conditions, the lack of overtime, even when they put in more than 40 hours a week, broken shifts so that people would be getting up early in the morning, then being idle during the day when they couldn't really have a second job but didn't have time to go home, and then would have a shift at the end of the day, sexual harassment by supervisors, and finally winning some changes there, including an increase in very low wages. And then shortly after, the university privatized that sector and said basically we don't have responsibility, even though they had contracted out to first Sodeco and then Aramark, the current employer. Then we saw in the 1990s a resurgence among housekeepers fighting back against very bad working conditions, unsafe working conditions, low wages, lack of respect and dignity on the job, all of course exacerbated by the fact that even though workers are allowed to unionize, they are not able to have a contract, which basically takes the teeth out of any bargaining position when you're not able to work for the terms and conditions of your wages. That basically culminated in a settlement against the university, which one would have thought would have been finally a recognition of how important these workers are, how much they, just like everybody else, are part of a workforce that keeps the university running for the sons and daughters of North Carolinians. But then here we are at the end of the decade, into the 21st century, and we're still seeing our low-wage workers, predominantly women, predominantly people of color, not only facing wage freezes over the last couple of years, but like Mary mentioned, a very militarized environment, bringing in ex-Army people to run the place, using manuals, talking about boot camps for workers. The workers that were initially suspended for sitting down on the job this summer, taking a break for health and safety reasons, basically. A situation that's not true for any other workers at the university. You know, people are able to move around, sit up, sit down. And these are workers who are hauling heavy buckets, who are
using chemicals
and very hot weather, you know, without masks in areas that aren't air conditioned over the summer because the students aren't there.
Hard working conditions.
And then when finally, you know, after extensive publicity and the rallies that were mentioned, the efforts to meet with the chancellor, we're still seeing a lot of those situations continuing. I do think that we need to see it as a step forward, that the chancellor has recognized the scope of these issues, mm-hmm. that it's not just about a sit-down policy, that it's about the lack of safe working conditions, the lack of a viable grievance procedure, sexual harassment, particularly of night shift workers, that all have to be addressed. So I think that it's been a difficult year for workers at the university, and as Miriam has talked about, and the town of Chapel Hill as well, but at least at the university we've seen a positive step taken, and I think that if we continue to shine the light on what's going there, that hopefully that will be an opportunity to move forward. Now, with the two municipal workers that have been laid off, unfortunately, we don't see a better situation yet, that mm-hmm. their effort to get unemployment has been denied. Their appeals have been denied, and a lot more work is still to be done. So it's troubling that both of these institutions, which we would hope which would really live up to the traditions that we see and pride ourselves on in this community, have not been what they should be in 2010. And in 2011, one hopes that we'll see a change.
Absolutely. Well, you know, as a graduate of this university, both undergraduate and graduate, it just makes me so sad, besides being angry, but also just sad that this keeps coming up every single decade. And this university, knowing its roots in the past of slavery, knowing that I think it has a special responsibility to show that kind of enlightened leadership in this state, which is still trying to move forward in a progressive way, and that it drags its feet this much, and that you have to keep pushing and pushing, and then for each step forward, sometimes it feels like there's two steps back. But Lucy, I'm glad you reminded us that the heartening news is that the chancellor has seemed to respond, and I really hope that something comes out of it.
I do want to add, if people, as Dick urged, get your pens out,
yeah.
Because the chancellor is only going to act if we continue the pressure. So
yes.
I think we can certainly recognize that his move to get outside consultants to sit down with the housekeepers to hear their grievances and make recommendations. We are demanding, by the way, that the housekeepers be part of that process, that they be part of
Absolutely.
Determining the request for proposal, that they be part of the interview mm-hmm. process, and that they mm-hmm. certainly get a record of the recommendations and assurance that the recommendations are going to be implemented. But I would urge people to call Chancellor Thorpe's telephone. Call him at 919-962-1365. That's 962-1365. Or email him at holden@unc.edu. For the public workers, it is really important that people call the town hall, 968-2714. That's 968-2714, and we can repeat that throughout the broadcast. Or you can email mayor and council, That's one word, Mayor and Council, at townofchapelhill.org. Remind them that they declare themselves a human rights city. Remind them that they also are one of the few municipalities that supported repeal of the Jim Crow Law 9598, which denies workers the right to collectively bargain. And as Lucy indicated earlier, it isn't a surprise that when workers started working together and most workers joining the workforce were people of color, that they then put into effect in 1958 the Jim Crow Law 9598. So it's mayor and council at townofchapelhill.org. We're demanding that the CAA contract be rescinded and that Kerry Bigelow and Clyde Clark, two sanitation workers who soon after, by the way, they filed a safety grievance because they weren't given water on their sanitation route, were terminated. So town needs to be brought to task. And by the way, the council particularly and the mayor, who's in charge of our town, we elect them. It's not the town manager. It's our elected officials.
And you know, whether this case turns out to be right or wrong in terms of the workers, again, this process was really shocking to me, that you could tell somebody for 6 weeks that they'd be in trouble and not tell them what the charges are. Doesn't that reek of Franz Kafka, some terrible novel from the 19th century, that you don't know what you're accused of, you can't have a chance to make a defense, so for 6 weeks they investigate you behind your back? And did you mention who the CAI is? It's not CIA, folks.
No, they act like it, but it's the CAI.
It's like the CIA, but it's the CAI, capital something. And they are a company that consults with employers and offers, I'm not quite sure, I don't want to misspeak this, but don't they say that they'll help you not get unions in? Or
They run training on
how to keep
have
out
a
unions.
Free, a workplace free of unions, absolutely.
A workplace free of unions, yes.
And they represent, by the way, the North Carolina Employers Association in their efforts to deny public workers collective bargaining. It's on their website.
And that in itself is cause for us all to have a major protest, just that this company is being hired by the North Carolina Employers Association. So the town of Chapel Hill hired these people with that kind of a reputation to investigate these two workers sort of behind their back. And so it's the process itself just smells to high heaven to anybody who could put themselves in that kind of a work position, 6 weeks of being investigated and not even know what you're being investigated about. So do we want to...
I just wanted to give people have been asking where they can send contributions.
Oh, okay.
I should say that WILF as an organization sent them a Christmas contribution to each of the two brothers, but listeners, WILF members and friends can send contributions. Just put Kerry Bigelow and Clyde Clark
in the
memo section of your checks, and you can send it to WILF, care of Ann Powers, P-O-W-E-R-S, 250-100 South Estes Drive, Chapel Hill, 27514. That's WILF, care of Ann Powers, 250-100 South Estes Drive, Chapel Hill, North Carolina, 27514. And just put Kerry and Clyde. Kerry and Clyde will be enough in the subject section.
Yeah.
So it goes directly to these two men and their families.
Because the final acts, I guess you can all tell from when we're broadcasting today, the final acts came just before Christmas. And that's a heck of a time to lose your job and then to be denied unemployment benefits. And these are both family men. And one of them's worked for the town for 13 years.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And grew up here in Chapel Hill. And
member of a long Clyde Clark is a long member, standing member of the community, a long history of work in this community, as has Carrie. Carrie's been working public work for over two decades.
So he's been in Chapel Hill for about 8 years, I think.
Yeah.
And, so these are family men. These are mature men who have had excellent work records until this sudden turn of events, and that in itself makes you wonder. So we are supporting them, and we hope that in this spirit of this holiday spirit, when we try to be as generous as we can, that you will keep them in your hearts, and if you can, in prayers, and if you can, please send a few bucks or a lot of bucks to help out them and their families. That would be great. So there's been a lot also happening this year. One of the things I just reminded myself about we had the Dream Team. This is the young people who were trying to get a bill passed where those who were brought here by their parents when they were small children and who have been going to schools here, have been educated here, and want to be part of this country, do not know any other country, were trying to get where there was a process by which they could be gain citizenship. And it was quite a complicated process. They had to go to college for a couple of years or join the military. There was just various steps along the way. And they've been working so hard. We had some of them on our show. They're here in the summer when during that brutal heat wave, I think three of them, maybe four, had the courage to do a hunger fast in Raleigh near the legislature and come out that they were undocumented and took that risk to make their point to try to get this act passed, to show their desperation to get this act passed. And it was recently turned down yet again. And I understand, correct me, any of you if I'm wrong, that the deciding vote was our own Senator Kay Hagan, which really upset me. And I wonder, now, how is she supposed to be better than Burr? Or is she supposed to be a Democrat?
I don't think it was the deciding vote, but it was certainly one of the deciding votes.
I heard it was the decide that if she had voted, it would have gone through. Maybe I'm wrong?
There were 41 votes against it. If there had been 40, it would have passed. So,
mm-hmm, right.
Her vote.
One more vote.
Yeah.
Was her or she was one of the 41, and if she hadn't voted that way, it would have passed.
Yes, and she's a Democrat that we've had such high hopes for, along with our president, such high hopes of some progressive things occurring, and that was I don't have her number handy right in front of me.
But it's listed.
Or you can go to the WILF website, www.trianglewilf.org, and the Raleigh and the D.C. addresses are listed, and the telephone numbers for all of our elected officials. And we certainly encourage you to keep those numbers handy for so many issues.
Yes.
And as Gloria's been talking about the DREAM Act, I think the whole issue of education has one that we've been very involved in this year.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Certainly the DREAM Act and the fact that it didn't pass this year is a real disappointment. I believe that Senator Hagan's excuse was that she wouldn't do it unless it was in the context of, quote, comprehensive immigration reform, unquote. But there's no reason that this couldn't have been passed, even as we continue to work for something that would bring more justice to people who've come to this country out of economic and political necessity.
And these
We've
are children,
also seen an education struggle unfolding in the Wake County schools, the whole struggle there. They had developed a great improvement in their school system by making sure that there was socioeconomic diversity, that this had actually become a model. It had made the front pages of the New York Times. We'd seen an increase in scores. And then with the election of some very reactionary school board members, there has been an attempt to derail that. And Wilf and the state NAACP and a number of different allies around the state have really been looking at that very seriously. If here, a community that had taken so many steps to make major progress can, with one election, see all that taken away, we see really serious implications for that. In Chapel Hill, in our own Chapel Hill Carrboro school systems, we've talked about the fact that the problem is not the resegregation of the schools, but resegregation within the schools, that we have a decades-old tracking system, and despite the fact that we have school board members and a superintendent who've been talking for decades now about closing the achievement gap between white and black and brown students, that achievement gap has continued. And now, of course, the Chapel Hill Carver schools are in the middle of selecting a new school superintendent, and one can only hope that this superintendent, along with the backing of the school board, can move beyond talking about ending the achievement gap and really taking those steps necessary to do it. So I think whether it's the DREAM Act on the national level, the state level, Wake County, and here in our own community, that these are issues that we all have to continue to pay attention to. And as a mother and grandmother, these are issues that I care about and we care about for all of our children.
Well, in speaking, I just want to mention this. Dick, you get a chance.
Yeah. Thank you. I happen to have Kay Hagan's D.C. number.
Yes. Good.
202-224-6342. That's area code 202-224-6342. That's her office number in Washington, D.C. Then a local number is area code 919-856-4630. That's 919-856-4630. And I think it's time to take a station break.
Okay. We're taking a station break. You are listening to Wilp's Wednesday afternoon wake-up call. Wake up to what's going on in this country that you're not hearing about on the commercial media. And we're very happy to have you, our listeners, with us, and we're doing an end-of-the-year show, kind of looking at some of the issues we struggled with and that many of them are still ongoing from 2010 and our challenges for 2011. We have with us Lucy Lewis and Miriam Thompson, who are Wilp sisters, and, of course, my co-host and technical engineer, Dick Paddock, who keeps this program going.
Well, it keeps it on the air.
Keeps it on the air.
Right. So,
are you going
to do
Our
underwriter?
Our underwriter.
The underwriter for this show is Internationalist Bookstore, 405 West Franklin Street, a cultural treasure, a wonderful place to get the latest in bumper stickers. or books that you won't find anywhere else on the shelf.
In the big box stores, yeah.
You won't find them in the big box stores. You won't find them probably many places. It's very unlikely that you'll find it anywhere outside of Internationalist being on the shelf. And they also are a cultural resource providing interface between people who want to inform you and you, so that you can be informed.
And like WCOM-FM that we are broadcasting from, which is an all-volunteer FM radio station, the Internationalist Books is also all volunteers. And they are
another treasure.
They have kept going for about 20 or 30, 25 or more years, and are well-beloved in the community. So we recommend you stop in, say hello.
Right, and that's it. And also they have a website, internationalistbooks.org. And
okay.
We shouldn't forget that Triangle Wilf also has website.
We do.
TriangleWILPF.org.
Yes.
And you can find information about us, archives of old shows, newsletters, although I understand they're not exactly up to date.
But they will be.
They will be.
As Laurie said, don't forget the website for WCOM, which is WCOMFM.org.
Yeah.
And you can stream the show live from that website.
Mm-hmm. If you're having a lot of, if you're having problems,
anything else, whatever's on the air at any time, you can just click on the Listen Now button and it'll be streamed directly to your computer. So if you have problems with our 100-watt wonder low-power radio station, be sure to think about streaming.
It is low power, and some people report to me they have some problems. I am one of the fortunate ones. My radio at home, which is not the fanciest, gets it in fine. My car radio gets us in fine. But if you're one of those who has some few problems or by your location or whatever, do stream it live. There's some great programming on WCOM, and it is a community treasure. I wanted to pick up on one of the things that, Miriam, you were saying about the militaristic, increasing militaristic atmosphere and the hiring of ex-military who are trying to have make where the housekeepers work, make it go according to military discipline, boot camp. I think they had
a
training booklet called
Boot Camp.
Because that also loops right on back to Wake County School Board, which has hired an ex-general, Tata, and that is his name, and I'm not being facetious, and God bless him, but that's his name. And he, and I'm not holding that against him. He could be a wonderful person, well up on education. Unfortunately, he seems to have very little experience or education in education or educating young people. And one of the things that is a little troublesome in what's supposed to be a nonpartisan kind of position, that is a leadership position in the community, is that he has been a commentator on Fox News. And one of the remarks that he has made that I find very troubling is that he reviewed Sarah Palin's book, I think, and said that he thought that she would make a better president than President Obama. Now, I have my issues with President Obama, but that was so crazy and so beyond the pale that was pretty shocking.
He's been a real propagandist for right-wing causes.
Yes.
And, I mean, that's number one. It's also what Wilf does best. You know, Wilf and the program and what we're trying to do now, which is connecting the dots.
Yes.
So it's not only a general, but I'm going to ask Lucy to talk about the generals that are, as soon as they leave their posts, they go into corporate Americas to continue the military machine. Well, now we see they're going into the Wake County school system. But you need to know that I think it's a brigadier general, retired, Tata. Had about 7 or 8 months in training in administrative school administration, 8 months, less than 8 months, and then another 8 months as head of food supplies in the Washington, D.C. school district. So he has had no hands-on education experience, plus the kind of political views that he brings to a school system. We should mention, by the way, that Raleigh and Wake County enjoyed enormous economic growth under the previous superintendent because of its commitment to socioeconomic diversity and the extraordinary growth and development of the school system.
And aren't they being investigated?
They are being investigated by the Justice Department. We can have a whole discussion about the Justice Department.
That'll be another night.
This one, they happen to be doing well. Their effort to indict WikiLeaks is not our best view of the Justice Department. In this society, especially when we were talking about workers, the more transparency, the better. But I think the generals and what's happening to the militarization, not only of our campus and
our country, and
who knows what kind of education our kids are going to be getting, but our country.
Well, other folks here may know more about the story than I do. It's something that I want to look into further, but found out just a couple of days ago that the Boston Globe had done an expose showing that 80% of retiring U.S. generals were going into jobs as consultants and contractors to the Pentagon, and that they were, in fact, signing on to their new positions before they had left the Army, which makes one wonder about the conflict of interest that they brought to their positions. It's just very troubling that, in terms of the Army being nonpartisan, being an independent body, acting presumably in our nation's best interest, that we have people that are then getting very lucrative jobs working for the military-industrial complex and finding new ways to use military hardware or security. We know that the U.S. government has been contracting out, privatizing a number of services, for example, Blackwater, which came out of North Carolina, which was used for security purposes in Iraq and then was involved and implicated in the shootings and killings of Iraqi civilians, is not liable to the same kind of scrutiny that they would be if they were public Army forces. So this is just a very troubling trend, and to see somebody who's coming out of the Army and, like Miriam said, is a well-known commentator for right-wing causes coming into our school systems, is just very, very troubling. And again, we're talking about connecting the dots. We talked earlier about the struggles of workers. We've been talking about the education struggle. And, of course, we're now continuing to see another year of the longest war in U.S. history, an area that where Wilf, since its founding in 1915, has been very concerned. Wilf is known for its stand in the community for the longest-running vigil against the war, from 1968 to 1973, every week on Wednesdays in front of the post office, which is now Peace and Justice Plaza. And we've been honored to be able to join the Catholic workers in their weekly vigil Friday afternoons, 4:30 to 5:30 in the winter and 5 to 6 in the summer hours, opposing first the sanctions against Iraq, then the war and occupation of Iraq, then the war and occupation in Afghanistan, which are just continuing to drag on and on and on, at a time when we're seeing major unmet needs in this country, so that we continue to say, you know, bring the troops home now and money for jobs and education, not for war. That it's been a terrible year for working people in this country and around the world at the same time that we're continuing to fund these incredibly expensive, wasteful wars of occupation.
And talk about deficit. Talk about deficit when the war is costing us trillions and no one can estimate the cost of the returning vets. And they're talking about
and then taking
it out on Social Security and Medicare and education.
Well, that's going to be the challenge coming right up, because one of the things they say, it's a given in American politics that particularly Democratic administrations feel they got to prove their toughness by being for war or supporting
testosterone storm.
Huh?
Testosterone storm.
Yeah, and I just heard a commentator today on Amy Goodman's show, Democracy Now!, saying that with the military's embarrassment with what's happened in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I didn't know they were embarrassed. I was a little heartened to hear they're embarrassed. But that the new way in, that they're going to be showing their manliness is to face up to the painful cuts that we need to make because of our deficit. Now, they couldn't face up to the painful letting lapse the tax benefits for the wealthiest people in the country. Somehow they weren't manly enough for that, but that they are now talking about we have to face up about looking at Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and the pain of that will be borne by the working people and the poor people in this country, the people who need help the most. And they're going to use that deficit that they just increased with that tax bill by billions of dollars
and war
and try to take it out of the already hungry and hurting mainstream working people of this country. And this is going to be, I'm afraid, a huge fight. And we better get out there and fight, because I, for one, will be out with my little tin cup.
I wonder whether Dick might check on Obama, because that's another thing. Everything, I mean, it's so grotesque, and gives Wilf its most challenging year, I think, in the coming year. I did want to point to Bill Moyers in The Nation, which I think is November 1st, who reminds us about, I don't know how embarrassed the military is about losing wars. I think it's about the power of the...
I was surprised to hear that.
Yeah,
too,
it was Alan Nairn who said, and I love Alan Nairn.
Yeah, I think he was making
I'm
the
not,
point.
Yeah, or
an ironic
being cutting irony.
It went
right.
over our head.
Right. But $5 billion price tag to the most expensive midterm election in history, where, you know, corporate America is increasingly, we are at war with democracy, I mean, that's what he calls it. He says, if the dagger of corporate money pierces the heart of democracy this year, we may not have the strength to pull it out afterward. The 2010 election is a watershed for America. It is money versus democracy. And isn't it interesting that it's the 50th anniversary of the of Eisenhower's speech warning against the military-industrial complex? And isn't it interesting that 80% of the generals who are retiring are going into the very military suppliers? And isn't it interesting that people are talking about a power elite? So we have to continue building our grassroots, and because our voices now are going to be more important than
and
ever.
And some of you may have heard this already, but when Eisenhower was writing that speech about the military-industrial complex, he had put in military-industrial congressional complex and crossed off congressional because
yes,
it was too
right.
hot a potato. And one of the ways that the military and the corporations have been so smart, they have managed to put installations, military and corporate installations, in every state of the union, so that every state has jobs dependent.
It's worse than that. It's every single congressional district but one. There's one congressional district somewhere that doesn't have
any military.
I don't happen to know offhand which one it is.
Or hardware.
But all the others have explicitly got installations there in order to, clearly have the hooks of the elite military in there.
So whenever somebody gets enough courage to talk about cutting back a little bit, whoever is the maybe cutting this space or that, and whoever's the congressman in that district raises holy heck because of jobs. He says, oh, we can't lose the jobs. So this is a very, it's like a spider web. It's a power base all over the country. And it's...
Except we could have a lot more jobs if we diverted military spending to economic needs at home, as we have one of the highest unemployment in North Carolina. And North Carolina sports one of the highest unemployment in the country. So the military jobs are not helping unemployment. And wait until they try to work on the public workers. So there's a lot of challenges and battles. By the way, it's interesting to me. Not only are they talking about the deficit and cutting Social Security, but Obama's coming out in return for his tax package. He's freezing federal workers, freezing their wages.
Yes.
As 2% of the population gets most of the tax benefits, he is addressing the deficit by freezing workers' wages and cutting Social Security and Medicare.
Well, one of the things that we want to cut back on the military expenditures, I don't think this congressman in 750 overseas bases around the, and that may be where we could make a big issue. There's 750 bases all around the world, many of which are not needed, and that's an expensive proposition. So that's just something to keep in mind for 2011, when they're looking for places to cut the deficit. Well, don't let me forget about that one. We can
Deficit is big. I think we have to, Lori, sort of expose the power elite, because it's the military that the only ones that benefit from overseas bases, or the only ones mm-hmm. that benefit from increased spending on mm-hmm. war, as mothers and fathers and aunts and uncles and mm-hmm. cousins are losing their loved ones. Mm-hmm. They are the ones that continue to talk for war. So I think we have to get back to what a really civil society should look yeah. like, and paint a different picture than it's being painted by.
And talking about the corporations in overseas, was it just today, or where did I hear that as of now, the corporations in this country have more jobs overseas than in this country?
That's right. It is today. Yes. It was NPR said more corporations, or maybe it was Amy.
Maybe it could have been Amy.
but that's right.
Those good programs.
Our corporations are sending more jobs abroad, hiring more people yeah. abroad than they are in this country.
They created 1.4 million jobs overseas and less than a million in this country this past year.
Lucy mentioned earlier, and on a really upbeat, one of the great things beside connecting the dots, and we can go on forever, one of the great things
I need to warn you that we need to shut down a couple of minutes early, because we now have somebody coming in right behind us with a show at 6 o'clock. So
we should leave here about 5 of?
We didn't. Two of.
Okay. Close
enough. Give us a signal.
We'll just talk faster.
Right.
we'll cover more.
Yeah, let's remember if we can get something in about the triennial, too.
Yes. Dick will do that, because he was the one that got us our great site. We're very proud of what's going to happen for the triennial, Wilf. I wanted to make a point that we made on December 5th at our own 75th anniversary. And when we brought wonderful allies together, our Rogers Road community, our NAACP community, and when we were talking about Wake, one of the places where we need to pay attention clearly in Wake is our own Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and our own education system, and the struggle to make sure that every child is recognized as having a gift, that the achievement gap, particularly among children of color, is squashed, is redressed, finally, with an important teacher development program, with more community involvement. But every child should be able to achieve, and that will be the most important criteria for the new superintendent. So I wanted to talk about what we did among the hopeful signs, and what Wilf does so well, in addition to its broad picture. It fought war. And when it started in 1915, the definition of war has broadened. Its war against racism and poverty, war for an equal education for every child, war against violence against women, war against workers. So it does that, but it also makes important friendships and allies. And one of them we're working with in the schools, for example, is NAACP. The other, around environmental justice, is Rogers Road. So I think those are really important signs, because if it doesn't come from the bottom, as all our great friends have indicated, we're going to be really challenged by the increasing power at the top, including, I'm glad you mentioned, military industrial congressional, because there wouldn't have been bills that failed if it hadn't been for so many Congress members on the payroll and the $5 billion that got much of the Tea Party into power and unfortunately controls a lot of the Democrats and the so-called moderate Republicans as well.
Mm-hmm. No, and I'm glad you brought up some positive things. I mean, I think we have wonderful allies, and I think this whole thing of increasing the ties and the communication between those of us who are working for social justice in its many forms, I think it's so important if we're going to have any chance to have any success against the formidable foes that we struggle against. I'm going to give each of you a chance for a closing word.
Do you have some words about MLK?
Yes. We've talked about a lot of the challenges and the real setbacks this year and our struggles, but I think it's also important for our listeners as we close out the year to think about the things that we as the grassroots can do, that we've seen that the conservative and reactionary forces have been very successful in mobilizing the grassroots, but we know that there's an even stronger grassroots out there that really is committed to justice for all. And there are things that our listeners can do. One of those is join the annual Martin Luther King celebration here in the Chapel Hill Carborough community. That'll be held January 17th, starting as usual with a rally at the Peace and Justice Plaza, the former Chapel Hill Post Office on Franklin Street. That's typically held about 9:30 in the morning. It's followed by a march and then a rally at First Baptist Church. This year's speaker will be Dr. Ben Chavis, speaking on the 40th anniversary of the Wilmington 10 struggle. Many of our listeners will remember that when 10 anti-racist organizers were framed in Wilmington, and it took a major grassroots struggle to finally achieve their freedom. February 12th, we're going to be seeing H-Can J for its fourth year, historic Thousands on Jones Street, gathering people from around the state in support of a people's agenda, a 14-point people's agenda that covers many of the issues that we've been talking about today. Fair and equitable education for all of our children, an end to the death penalty, a repeal of the 95-98 law preventing public workers from organizing, and an end to the occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan so money can be spent on jobs and education. And that'll be February 12th in Raleigh, North Carolina, and information on that can be found on the state NAACP website, as well as updates on www.triangle.org.
TriangleWilf.org.
And I think on the national level, we've also seen some positive things that have happened, partly because of people writing and calling into their congresspeople. We've seen the passage of Don't Ask, Don't Tell in this lame duck session of Congress.
Yes, hooray.
Finally, after many years of struggle, recognizing that our gay and lesbian brothers and sisters have a right to be open about their sexuality, and that this finally, after a report from the military has said that in fact, gay and lesbians have been serving in our military for decades. They just haven't been doing it openly, and that the time has finally come to repeal that long overdue law. We've also seen the passage of the START Treaty, which is, just
modest,
a small step, but an important step right? in terms of recognizing the madness of nuclear war. So again, it's really important for people to remember that none of these would have happened without people speaking out, without people writing and calling and taking to the streets. There is much work to be done, but on the national level, we've seen some changes that can be made, and there are things that people here can do on January 17th and February 12th. Mary may have some closing comments, and I know that Dick then is going to talk about WILF, our 75th anniversary this year, and our National Congress that will be held here.
Yeah, I'll just take 30 seconds to talk about another very important ally in a right-to-work state, and certainly a national ally that's looking at its own more aggressive, assertive stance for justice, and that's our own state, AFL-CIO. I want to let people know that they're having a conference with David Price and Brad Miller on the 29th at 8:30 at the Brownstone Hotel. You can call me for more information, and that's 370-4114. It's in Raleigh. On Hillsborough, it's at the Brownstone Hotel. And you can call me at 370-4114. A very important ally. We can't, the great movements in our country have been because of unions and other social justice ally. And I just wanted to add that we did pass food safety in the Congress. That was important. Increased support for the federal drug and the Food and Drug Administration on food safety. And, of course, getting back to WCOM, more low-power radio stations. The internet bill wasn't supposedly the regulations weren't good, but we did multiply the opportunity for more people to communicate with each other using low-powered FM stations like WCOM.
Yeah, this is Dick Paddock. Every 3 years, the national organization of WILF has its triennial meeting, and this year, that is the one scheduled for 2011, will be here in Chapel Hill. It'll be hosted by the local WILF chapter, and of course with a lot of assistance from the national people who come. But we expect well over 100 people to show up, and it will be held June 1st to June 5th of 2011, and it will be on the UNC campus. And so those of you Wilfers out there who would like to volunteer to help, we need your help. I wouldn't say desperately, but very strongly. And you can call Miriam Thompson, who gave her phone number already, 370-4114. And you can call her, and she'll plug you in wherever you feel like you can be helpful.
Okay.
And now it's time we need to move on out of here. So Lori Hoyt and Dick Paddock want to thank Miriam Thompson and Lucy Lewis for being here and helping us review the past year and what's going on in the future. So we got to run along and
say good night to all of you listeners.
Yeah. Right. This is WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, your 100-watt wonder.
See you next Wednesday.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.